This is Jane Latour on July 26, 2006, interviewing Veronica Session from The Carpenters. So, Veronica, tell me about your background, where you were born and all.
Okay, I'm originally from Andrews, South Carolina. Oh. Both my parents are from Andrews, South Carolina. I myself was born in Wilmington, North Carolina. So it's a long time.
Uh-huh. What year were you born?
1959.
Okay.
So I'm 47.
Any siblings?
I have an older sister who has passed on now, and two younger brothers.
And so what did your parents do for work?
My father worked for GM in Tarrytown.
Oh.
And she worked at Ideal Corporation. They used to make parts to cars, not the toy.
Your dad was a member of UAW.
Yes.
And your mom was a union member?
Yes, I don't recall what local it was, mm-hmm. though, but it was a union.
Okay. And so what about your education?
I graduated high school at Brooklyn Tech.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Okay, let's
see where you start there.
So you're...
I graduated Brooklyn Tech, was what is called an industrial design major.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't go on to college.
What were you thinking of doing with that degree, industrial design?
I thought of being an industrial designer, but then thought college at that point in time was a commitment that I couldn't. I had some family issues, mm-hmm. and college I just didn't believe I could take on. So I went mm-hmm. on to really wish I had worked it out, uh-huh. kind of, and, you know, and when I graduate from there, too, mm-hmm. but I didn't. But I knew it was a very good high school where you just get a very good education mm-hmm. and learn how to use your head.
Now, did you learn math there?
Yes.
You have mm-hmm. good math skills?
Yes. Yes. It was the second best high school at the time, and I believe it still is. Mm-hmm. There were three high schools, Bronx High School of Science, Brooklyn mm-hmm. Tech, and then Stuyvesant. It looks
okay, cool. Okay, we'll try
Isn't
again.
Isn't that the Vox thing? Is that on? Maybe that's it?
Let's see.
Yeah, that might be it.
Okay. Technical know-how comes in handy.
Okay.
So,
I'm not sure
now...
What we left off
there
or what picked up.
Yeah.
You want me to go to the high school thing?
Again? Yeah. Well, tell me about your, what jobs you had before you went into the Carpenters.
Let's see. Basically, I was assistant bookkeeper for a, like, department store, balancing mm-hmm. their books.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was at the Bank of Boston, which is called a factory bank. Not a commercial bank where one is buying one goods from the other and we're mm-hmm. checking the credit and see if it's okay, that kind of thing. And I was there. It would have been 10 years shy of, I think, 3 months or so.
Wow.
And that's when I decided I wanted to be a carpenter and then left. But I was already vested after 5 years anyway.
I was thinking about that.
Mm-hmm.
So you decided you wanted to be a carpenter. Now, what made you think about that?
Well, actually, there was a half an hour sitcom. Well, in Brooklyn Tech, there's always kind of shop classes. There's actual foundry where you're making a wood pattern and making the mold and pounding dirt and making a cast of something. Then there's actual wood shop, and then there's drafting classes and all these different classes, and in which you use your hands and mm-hmm. your skills. So there was a half an hour sitcom. There's a Spanish lady, and I can't think of her name. But her husband owned a business, a carpentry outfit, and she used to help him.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought, well, I could do that.
Wow.
Yeah. And I decided, yeah, that's what I wanted to do. Because my job wasn't fulfilling. It was a lot of responsibility. I was the head of that department, mm-hmm. but not much money, and a lot younger than most of the people. So it was a lot of friction, and it wasn't satisfying there. So when I got that notion that I wanted to be a carpenter, I just searched for work mm-hmm. around the city, or at least in Brooklyn too, but where I saw mm-hmm. big jobs, and asked for work, and eventually, I think, maybe a year and a half or so, and I got lucky, and somebody said that they'd take me on. I wasn't aware of the apprenticeship program or mm-hmm. anything
mm-hmm.
like that, maybe I could have tried that venue, but I found my first job on my own,
okay.
and the foreman said he'd give me a try. For a week, so I took a week off of my job.
Mm-hmm.
He said, let's see how you do in a week and see if you're serious or whatever. And then that week passed, and he said I was doing good. And so I went back and quit my job.
Mm-hmm. Now, this was a non-union job.
No, this was a union job.
This was a union job.
Yeah, this was a union job. And he told me that I had to contact the local.
Okay.
And the apprenticeship program. And so I contacted both and got in. And
so, a nice guy.
Yeah. I was very fortunate, and I was on that job for about close to a year.
Mm-hmm.
And probably, I guess, at the end of that time, he told me, and that was my, well, of course, that was my first year and my very first job.
Mm-hmm.
And he said I was doing as good as any third-year apprentice. So I appreciated him saying that.
You had a real aptitude for it.
Yeah. I believe I would mm-hmm. have, and it, you know, turns out I do. That was the mm-hmm. best choice for me. Because I actually had the electrical apprentice application.
Uh-huh.
I forgot how I got that. But anyway, mm-hmm. I had got that, and I held on to it for a little bit. And I said, no, I just decided I wanted to be a carpenter. And I think that worked best for me.
Mm-hmm.
So since that first job.
Now, what kind of things were you doing on the first job?
First job, there were a number of deliveries, because it was quite a big job. Actually, it was Downstate Hospital in Brooklyn.
Oh, okay.
There was a section of it, like, that's on New York and, like, Lenox. Well, I insulated a lot. And
they were doing a new addition?
Yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh. I don't recall what was there before.
And what year was
that? I don't remember. 89, because I'm in 17 years like now. And then eventually he would kind of like let me work with a partner sometimes and help frame.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, one of the guys that I knew from that job, who I'm still in contact with, he used to kid me all the time that he used to want to keep me away from the general population because he thought I was maybe too attractive or whatever, and that would, you know, influence the guys, and there'd be, like, friction or mm-hmm. something could happen. Uh-huh. But if you're not all that involved or close to this, you know, mm-hmm. there's chances of something could happen.
So he was protective.
Yeah. So, he was fair, you know. Mm-hmm. The foreman was fair, and it was a decent group of guys. I had one little issue with some, you know, little knucklehead, but it didn't mushroom into anything, mm-hmm. and it was a good first experience.
Good.
Very good first experience, and towards the, you know, end especially, I got to use my tools more, and mm-hmm. so I that was a good base for me. You know, I felt even more confident that I could continue and mm-hmm. go on. You know?
So, now what was it about the work that you liked when you started doing it?
Well, I like using my hands. I like, I guess, making things, mm-hmm. you know, and you get to kind of like build like an erector set if you do it, if you frame it. That's basically what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And you could see what you've done at the end of the day.
Yeah.
You know, you can visually see it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from beginning to end, whether it was a small project or a big project that take maybe 2 or 3 days or whatever, you could always mm-hmm. see the accomplishment at the end. And I like seeing that. And I was attracted to the fact that I would make the same as a man.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't. It just really wouldn't rub well with me to, you know, be doing something, I don't know, whatever field where, you know, they're getting paid more than I am.
Yeah.
You know, so that was very attractive, you know. And, of course, it's, you know, good paying benefits overall.
Right.
But, and I thought it would all come together well for me, and it pretty much has.
Mm-hmm. Now, tell me about going to the union and getting into the apprenticeship.
Like I said, I called and registered as far as under apprenticeship school. And I forgot what cycle. I think I had to wait a couple of months before, you know, the mm-hmm. next school, I could get into the next cycle of classes. But school was relatively uneventful, I think. I mean, I passed all my classes as they came.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no, how you say, specific degree when you end. You just go through all your 4 years, mm-hmm. and if you complete the class and complete all your assignments, do well, you know, you just move on. But it's not like a degree or something that,
right.
you know, for carpenters at least. Mm-hmm. I think they're all for electricians. You get something. But the classes itself, they are, of course, they're pretty good, and they have a pretty good setup as far as the school itself. Mm-hmm. It's very well equipped.
Where is it?
It's 395 Hudson now, mm-hmm. inches around the corner.
Is that where you went?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Yeah, they had just moved there from another location.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I forgot where it was,
okay.
But yeah, they had just moved there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very well equipped.
How about women in the apprenticeship program?
Not many. Not mm-hmm. many, I believe. We're still, as far as carpenters are concerned, I think just about 2%,
okay.
maybe 2.1 or something, yeah. but very close to 2%, and that is my understanding. That hasn't changed very much.
So did you have some in your class?
I don't recall having any women in the class.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you ever meet anybody who did any sexual harassment training? Or I know they instituted that at some point, and I think Ellie Spicer was involved with that or somebody.
As far as I recall, Rebecca Laurie.
Okay.
Yeah, was doing the sexual harassment training. And now it's someone else. Mm-hmm. It may be Arlene Fisher, last I heard.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Arlene Fisher. And actually, I keep saying, but for lack of time, that I want to sit in on the class just to, you know, to take it in, kind of, and see how the guys are taking it in, or see how it's done. But I just haven't had time. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they do have sexual harassment classes. And actually, the one I was in, Rebecca was doing it at the time. Mm-hmm. Rebecca Laurie was doing it at the time.
And what was the reception?
I don't think it was taken as seriously as it should, you know. Yeah. Although they're you know, the class is presented, but I don't think they really understand the impact that it has on the female emotionally and how that affects her work, because she still has to work to complete her assignments and whatever, too. And I don't think they, you know, they really grasp that, that it is serious and not just, you know, always just a joke or, you know, I don't think they get that yet.
That's what I've heard. Okay, so now, did you have to join a local when you went into the apprenticeship?
Yes. Since that job that I started on was in Brooklyn, I joined a Brooklyn local. And I went and signed up and paid my fees. I don't recall what they were. There are local 926 in Brooklyn. They were on East 96th Street at the time. Actually, it might have been, they moved a couple of times. Yeah. But and there, that gentleman who was the head of it, he had just left, and his father, Phil Fajuri, was the head of the business agent for that local when I joined.
So his name is Italian. Were there a lot of Italians in the local?
Yes. Actually, now I think it's more people from the islands, or pretty close to it. And, you know, like you have the East Flatbush area and kind of like, so I think we have quite a few, probably out of all the locals, or like of Caribbean descent. But so I joined the local, and I was received, you know, well. Work fairly steady. Actually, this ties in. The time that I joined and now the work, how you get work is different.
Okay.
Now, well, at that point, you used to get it from your particular local. Now there's a general out of work list. Trying to think, maybe 5 years now or something like that for a number of years, which is out of the district council, so everybody calls that one thing.
Okay.
And it's
and
rotating.
How does that work with all the locals?
Yeah, well, the locals, I guess, they maintain, how you say, their own territory still, so that they're still actual locals, but we don't get our work from the locals.
Okay.
They, I guess, like, man the area, try to turn non-union work to union, you know, do different things.
Yeah. Whatever. So have you found that new system better?
I think it is better, but there's still some things they're like loopholes or ways to kind of like get around some things. Because, you know, as we talk to each other, we realize that, I'm like, I've never been sent out on a big job, and seems like certain people, and I actually think it was in the paper or in one of the John Conboy's write-up, that certain people were getting the big jobs all the time. You know, so somehow.
That persists.
Yes, that persists.
Yeah. Big jobs and the big bucks.
Yes. But overall, I think it's somewhat fairer. But as they're signing new contracts, and we just have a new contract since of July, which I don't have the specifics of.
This July?
Yeah,
wow,
just past July. And
you mean right now, 2006?
Yeah, right.
Okay.
And I heard that some things weren't, you know, the best. And then, and even the last contract before that, they allowed them to, what you call it, like request people.
Oh, yeah.
Because prior, it's supposed to be 50% company people who, they're union people, they get paid no different, but they're working for the company all the time.
Right.
And that's a good way for the company to keep people that they know and whatever, and that's fine. And it was supposed to be 50 straight from the list, you know. But now they've given most of the contractors, like I say, even prior to this July, the contract before that, the ability to request people. So they request people, they request their buddies still. So now it's no true 50-50. You know, it's still all company people, which makes it hard for the shop steward, because then they want to do things that they're not supposed to, and they're being pushed to do things they're not supposed to, and if the shop steward don't have enough backing, you know, then they can't do anything. Because if you tell, if you go to the business agent and say this is going on, and they'll say, well, they kind of ignore it and say, well, that's okay, or they'll blow it off or something, they won't do anything about it. A lot of people know now, they don't even try to kind of like do something. But even, I just mentioned this, just recently, on the job, there were some like foremen who worked inside, and some foremen who, whatever, they normally ask their own guys to work Saturdays, of course. And again, it should be 50-50, but whatever. But they weren't sure if we were going to have to work long hours, work extra, you know. So the guys asked me, he said, do you know if we work just a 7-hour? I said, that's what he said. And he said, well, then we want to make sure, because then they'll try to not have them get another break. Just work through it. And the foreman actually, a few of them were together, he said, we need you to protect us, because I was a shop steward. So they want somebody to be able to do what's right by the men, by the workers.
Yeah.
You know. But again, the shop steward, a lot of times,
it's in a position not to be able to.
Right. Yeah. You know, when they're actually legally, technically writing on that. But if, if the BAs don't back you up and you know that, sometimes you'll try, either sometimes you just, you know, realize you're not going to get any back. But the issue is they really want somebody to be able to stand up for them so they can say, okay, we can't.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
But then they're being pushed. The workers are being pushed to do things that they really don't want to do. They know it's harmful for the union as a whole or whatnot, but they need backup.
Yeah.
They need backup.
Tell me about, so what year did you finish your, so if you went in 89, then it was 4 years?
Right.
So it was like 93? Mm-hmm. Did they have a little graduation ceremony?
Yes, there is, every year when they graduate, they have a, actually I don't know if it's at the same place all the time, but there's a graduation, and, you know, you can invite at least two people, you know, to celebrate, I guess, the same as a high school or whatever, you know, to celebrate your,
they have
your,
a dinner?
Your completing. Yes. I didn't go to the last one, but I went to the one before that, just as a kind of like guest, because I wanted to kind of like reach out to the women, especially as they, you know, were there. Because like, since I don't often go to the school anymore, I don't necessarily see anyone.
Right.
But so it was arranged that I could come. And so the women that I saw there, I just kind of introduced myself and you know, gave them some contact information and let them know about the women's committee and so on. And I think we didn't do it just past one, but I guess I should bring that up again for somebody to see if they could, you know, be there and you know, kind of like welcome them, you know, as well.
Yeah, that's a nice idea. So tell me about, well, why don't you first talk about becoming a journey person, and then we'll talk about when you became a steward.
Okay.
What was did you feel a difference?
There's actually nothing that really stands out, but that is a critical time because, you know, if you haven't been like gaining your skills and building the whole time, that's where, you know, it really can really take a bad turn for you, because of course apprentices would always pay less than mechanics, and then, you know, they want you to be able to hold your own. And I kind of transitioned into that fairly well. I had a pretty good start, and I guess even coming from Brooklyn Tech, I just kind of knew I would be, you know, fairly well suited for the business. So I didn't have too much problem in that way. But I know a lot of people and a lot of women do, because even you know, some guys do, especially if they're not company guys. Because some companies have apprentices that generally work for them, and usually when they turn mechanic, they're pretty decent and they keep on, you know. But women are kind of always at the bottom rung of everything, so they get less of a chance to use their tools and skills as they're building, you know, up in their years. So I think that definitely is an issue. Definitely is an issue. But fortunately for me, I made that transition pretty well. A lot of times, when I've heard from other women, like when they're working fairly steady with the same company, even, and they turn mechanic and then they let go. Because sometimes they don't even have them doing real skilled work.
Yeah.
You know, so, but because you need to learn your skills for the longevity.
Mm-hmm.
You're apprenticed for 4 years and you're like a carpenter for 20 or whatever,
right.
You know, or more. So, yeah.
Time to make it happen.
Yes.
So what do you see as the challenges within the industry?
I think one key thing to turn things around is that there has to be, there has to be really good stewards.
Mm-hmm.
With real backing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, the people, they really want someone to be able to say, no, mm-hmm. this person can't do that, this person can't stay late without getting paid overtime, mm-hmm. this person can't, you know, when it's time to wrap up, mm-hmm. they're kind of skittish because they want to give them a little bit more, mm-hmm. you know, whereas, like, as far as the company is concerned, they want them to be back from lunch on time, they don't want them taking any more time, but mm-hmm. it's okay for them to stay a little bit later to do a little bit more. So the people, the workers really want somebody to be able to say, no, this mm-hmm. or that can't happen.
Right. Now, how did it happen that, when did you first become a steward and how did that happen?
With some changes with the government and getting involved in the dissent
council,
yes,
mm-hmm.
Because of various, I guess, racketeering charges and, you know, mm-hmm. certain charges the government would have been overseen. And prior to that, the stewards used to go out from the local, mm-hmm. just being like appointed kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Since the government got involved, the stewards just have to complete certain classes, and they're mm-hmm. like various health and safety classes, union, like, for lack of a better word, a union, a description of how the unions came about, a union
mm-hmm.
history kind
mm-hmm.
of thing. Healthy certification, different classes, maybe like 8 to 10 roughly classes mm-hmm. you have to complete. And then you get certified as a steward, and then you could, when you put your name in on that general out of work list,
mm-hmm.
you'll go down as a steward. And when they have, I say, a combination of, because when you put yourself on the out of work list, you put in what borough you want to work in,
mm-hmm.
you put in, they have your skills listed,
mm-hmm.
you know, and, when those two things come together, because some people only put down sheetrocking, let's say,
mm-hmm.
and some people have, like, hardware, frame and sheetrocking,
mm-hmm.
concrete and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So the more you have down, the faster you will go out.
Right.
But, so it's a combination of what skills you have and where you say you want to work. I normally put down everything besides that now, because I don't want to go out that
uh-huh.
far. So I'll put down in the Bronx, I'll put down in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens. So when those two things come together, type of work and location, you'll get a call.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's
and you
like
put
a
steward there
list.
Too. That you're,
right.
That
you
you're
put steward. And also, as a minority, that is also called a skill set, just like
uh-huh.
just like framing the sheetrock and whatever. You let them know you're a minority.
Uh-huh. And what about female?
And,
does that count for anything?
Not really. Nobody does.
It used to, but not anymore.
Yeah, you put that down as well.
I guess.
And. As contractors call and indicate what they need, like
mm-hmm.
I need 10 woodworkers over here, and if your name is at the top, more or less, then and, you know, you do woodwork and you said Brooklyn, then you know
mm-hmm.
they'll give you a call, and they have, I don't know, about 5 people making the calls between 3 and 6, and you'll get a call and give you the location,
mm-hmm.
form and name and so on, you know, show up with the tools. And stewards generally go out faster than
mm-hmm.
Just a normal worker. Just
now,
because,
how did you? Mm-hmm. Why did you decide you wanted to do this?
Well, the steward thing, that was because I did see a change in the business, and not for the better.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't so much that I figured I'd work more, but it was that I wanted to do the right thing by the workers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wanted to, because I know there are some stewards who just kind of want to show up and
take advantage.
yeah, not do the right thing.
Yeah.
But I did notice a change happening, and I kind of wanted to be a part of this solution for the better. You know, so that was the main thing.
So, what kind of responses do you get to trying to be a steward? What are some of the?
Sometimes it's good, but a lot of times it's hard if the company, say, like I indicated, that they have, like, the company people, and then they put in for a request for more people, it's basically all company people. So
you're not really enforcing anything.
Right. You know, they're kind of running the show more or less, and you can kind of try, and especially also if the local have a good relationship with the company, for whatever reason, it's hard to affect change when you see something, you know, wrong. It's hard to address an issue, which is very frustrating, although I still try. But it's very hard, and I think, as I mentioned, that's one thing. Well, I think mentioned that I think the main thing that would change things are really stewards who have. Because I think stewards and most people, they want to do the right thing. But if they know that they're not going to be supported, it's just no use. But doing away with that requesting, or at least limiting it to maybe, I don't know, 40% of the workers or something, but basically they could request, and again, it's just all, if you can have 20 people and if they all really your buddies, there's no true 50-50. They need to be a true 50-50, and then they're less likely to go along with the program, you know. But I've been successful in some times and then and not in others. But they really do. The workers really do want a shop steward who's able to do something.
Now, what year, do you remember what year you became a steward?
I think it was roughly 6 years ago.
Okay. How is it with the safety situations, the health, safety, and asbestos and things like that?
I don't recall running into any asbestos type issues. Sometimes, what generally I find is like, kind of like where they're working by like an open shaft or something, you know, instead of like having it barricaded correctly, you know, you're just kind of like working close to it and trying to be careful, you know, and those kind of things. So those I try to address, because all it takes is somebody, you know, I don't know, walk by with a ladder or something and make somebody trip or whatever, and then, you know, they're gone. So those are the one kind of things. And then a lot of times they might make a makeshift ramp.
Oh yeah,
and you know, just do quickly, and then it's just not correct, or let's say the ramp is not connected to the floor correctly, or when there's a step, and little things like that, where they just try to, I don't know, just tend to overlook, but yeah, that can make somebody trip and fall, you know, and then that person is out for weeks or whatever, and then it's a lawsuit, whatever. So those things, I just, especially since I'm steward, I just kind of usually stop and just kind of do it, you know, myself. And recently, I know somebody was walking by an open panel, and I'm like, okay, well, we need to get the electricians over here to close the panel, put a cover on the panel, because the panel was live, and then, you know, let's work safely. Meanwhile, I started to cover it with the painters had a, what do you call it, those drop cloths, you know, and so I did that meantime, but then I got the electrician, you know, to put a cover over it. So I think it's more or less like open areas where there can be falls or you know, something like not closing like live electrical, you know, panels or situations. Not so much, you know, asbestos. Actually, I had an asbestos license, which I let expire because I didn't use it. I got it just for work, because what we would do is we don't do the removal, but the carpenters would do the... they would build a decon area.
Oh yeah,
that's required for it. So I got a license to do that, but I never got a call for it, so I let it expire. And then I said, that's just as well, because sometimes they try to cut corners.
Yeah,
and asbestos is like no joke.
Yeah.
So I decided,
yeah,
you know,
Grand Central, full of it.
Yeah.
Tell me about what about challenges or obstacles with the union? Is
okay. Well, the challenges and obstacles, let's say. I think as far as being a woman, there are little or minor things, which is not really little or minor because it takes extra time. So I'll say, like, we're supposed to have our own separate bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times they try to just not adhere to that. But sometimes when they do, like we've been on jobs and they'll have one, they're supposed to give everybody a key. Mm-hmm. Every woman on the job is supposed to have a key. For instance, and they'll like to put one key in one location, and we'll have to go, you know, go get the key.
Yeah.
And the key could be the opposite direction of where the bathroom is.
Mm-hmm.
So that means you have to go and get the key, then go to the bathroom. And in construction, sometimes the guys don't even like to stop to use the bathroom.
Right.
They'll use the column.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
I told you,
I was just writing about that.
And that's not because they don't really want to use the bathroom, but they don't want to take the time to. They don't want to take time to do it. So meanwhile, we'll have to go get this key and use the bathroom. So, you know, it takes time, and you're walking one way, and the thing is, if they see you going one way, they know you're working over here, they know that you're going to the bathroom.
Right.
You know, so it shouldn't be where we're so visible, and she's going to the bathroom, she's taking time. And
okay, so.
Yeah, so I was just going to explain it about the little things, which are big things, and I think also that sends a message to the men that kind of like we're just not worthy or something,
right.
You know. Mm-hmm. And actually, I was on one job where the company lied and said I did a lot of things that I didn't do. Said that I was going to falsely accuse somebody of sexual harassment, which was just ridiculous. But that's a serious thing.
Mm-hmm.
But so they had a whole list of things of lies, and one of them was that I went across the street to use a bathroom. Now, that's where he told me to go to use the bathroom, because
right.
we had
yeah.
the bathroom on site for me, you know. So it was just like, you just want to, you know, kind of like explode. And they had no records of like having, you know, I think they had like two bathrooms maybe or whatever. And I didn't feel like I got any support, because all the union had to do was come down and at least look, and they would have saw that there was no bathroom
yeah.
there, you know.
Right.
And it was in McDonald's or Burger King or something across the street, which he told me to use. But I wasn't going along with his program. He wanted to have non-union workers to come in and insulate. And I said, no, you need to get an apprentice for that. And he asked me several times, different locations, different points in time, maybe a couple of weeks apart or whatever. You know, mm-hmm. so I wasn't going along with, mm-hmm. you know, what
so
he
wanted.
So
it was retaliation.
Yeah. So he trumped up all these lies.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the bathroom thing is an issue because you're made to feel like kind of like less than. And even though it's construction, we're still women, and we're still it's still a job mm-hmm. for us, and we shouldn't be treated less because we don't work in an office.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we should have an accessible bathroom. Should not have to go through changes to get a key. You know, key to be made for it just like that. They feel okay. Why make $1.50 key? You know? And also sometimes you just people forget, so one person will use the key and then they got to keep it with them.
Right.
And then you got to
track it down.
Yeah, you got to track down the key, which takes more time and you're kind of like nervous or ill at ease because you want to get back to your work and try to complete it. So that's one thing which is minor but then major.
Mm-hmm.
And I lost my train of thought, but
what happened with that list of charges? Did you get the union to represent you? And
they kind of took back some of them. I'm trying to think. There was about three or four things. Oh, okay, one thing was the bathroom. I went off-site. One thing was me falsely accusing that I said I was falsely accused somebody of sexual harassment. One thing was that I tried to stop somebody from working. So I guess even one or two more, which I forget. And the thing about stopping somebody from working was We had a delivery coming in, like, when before the window was put in, the panel for the window was put in. And the guy, I think, was working close to the edge, as I recall, so I just told him to be careful,
mm-hmm.
you know, and don't be a hero, wait till it comes further
right.
in or something
yeah.
like that. But I wasn't trying to stop anybody from working.
Yeah.
But that was a complete lie. And as I recall, they tried, this was a few years ago, and they tried to retract some of it. And then I don't know why they said, okay, well, all this didn't happen, and then at the end they kept it in there. So, I was the one who blew the company up on charges because they laid me off.
Mm-hmm.
And then to kind of, bolster their stance is when mm-hmm. they made up all these lies. I didn't get, any penalties, but they didn't either,
mm-hmm.
you know. So I didn't feel satisfied over that at all,
mm-hmm.
because for one thing, I didn't feel that the union really wanted, I'm just steward, I mean, I'm representing the union, that's what I'm there for,
mm-hmm.
you know, so I felt, and they don't have to be, how you say, and I don't think they're necessarily supposed to be impartial,
mm-hmm.
but because if the steward is saying this and that happened, You should be wanting to know, try to find if that was true or not.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I don't feel that was the case at all. it just wasn't, like I said, simply all they had to do was come to the job and see there was a bathroom there. Yeah. So then you could dispel that. Mm-hmm. And then you could say, well, why did you put that? And you know.
Yeah.
And then also, actually, from that, was it the arbitrator? Because we had to have several meetings, you know, whatever. And somebody asked me if I, was I trying to be Norma Rae?
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody from the union or the company?
The district council? Yeah, mm-hmm. I was trying to be Norma Rae. And I was just almost stunned. I'm like, you know, I'm supposed to stand up there doing my job. It's like, you know, I just find it hard to believe that I could even cross that person's mouth. It was supposed to be impartial, if anything, and just trying to find out, you know, factual information of the truth. And I stated whatever I stated, so that certainly didn't require you trying to be Norma Rae.
Right, yeah.
I'm trying to support the union here. You know, so it's just not easy, and it just seems that nobody really wants to get to the truth,
mm-hmm.
or really wants to do anything about the bad contractors or the bad things that are happening mm-hmm. out there.
That's probably because of too many relationships, right?
Yeah. I think too many people, just like a friend of mine who was also popping, and she was saying that her boss is on the board of, I think it's the Building Association or something,
you know.
He was talking to her about that. I think we're supposed to have, something, a market rate, because we're trying to get, because we don't have residential work.
Oh, yeah.
In Long Island, the union carpenters out there, mm-hmm. they do residential work, but otherwise, in these other boroughs, we don't have union residential work. So they're trying to be a market rate, or something market
or
rate.
Or prevailing rate, or not market rate.
Not prevailing. I think they call it market and then something else.
Mm-hmm.
But whereas you get paid less, mm-hmm. so that you can compete for the non-union.
Right, yeah, I see.
And I think they said it's supposed to be $28 an hour. I think if it's a call, your credits will work the same,
uh-huh.
and I think your health benefits and all
paid
that.
Less.
Right,
so
paid
how much
less.
Of a difference is that?
So we get 40, we just got to raise, I think it's 41, 25 now. Yeah,
so 28 instead of 41?
Yeah.
Wow. That's quite a reduction.
Yeah, so yeah. I didn't get the whole of how that's going to work, but apparently there's supposed to be like two lists, and mm-hmm. I guess, I don't know if you can be on both at the same time, probably not. I wouldn't think, but I'm not sure, because I don't know, you know, the mm-hmm. specific, just that I know there's a proposal for that. Who the proposal goes to, I'm not sure. But
well, don't the members get to vote on the contract?
No, we don't.
Oh.
We have delegates.
Mm-hmm.
Like each local has a certain amount of delegates depending on the members,
and
the amount
vote.
Of members, and they vote.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't imagine. There are some things that I heard that within this contract that are not necessarily good, so I can't imagine. I'm just curious as to who voted on what.
Right.
I'm really curious.
And do you think you'll ever find out?
I don't know. Actually, I'm wondering if that information that, members have access to.
Mm-hmm.
Or
we'll have to find out.
Yeah. I'm really curious about that, because there are some things mm-hmm. that it just continually, even though we have certain rights, even in the past, but if you're not supported in them, then, you know,
right.
you're going to deal them out of the money anyway. But still now, it seems like contractual things have been changed. The language, you know, actually is on black and white in their favor,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so that's bad when it's in black and white.
Now, I seem to recall that you had a sexual harassment case around 2000, 2001. Did you? You had some kind of legal action going on. Because it was when I was at AUD. You were looking for a lawyer.
Yeah,
something was going on.
I just
on.
Can't get confused on the year.
Yeah.
But there was a situation where I was working, actually doing concrete work and working with a partner, you know, fairly steady,
mm-hmm.
same partner. And he would continually ask me, like, to go out with him. Mm-hmm.
And he was a union member?
Yeah, he was a union member. He was a company person
for
that company. And because they'll usually match a company person with a non-company person. And he would, you know, show his interest and asking me out and whatnot. And then also, kind of like brushing up to me and when it's unnecessary, but it wasn't necessarily close quarters or that kind of thing. And I would continually tell them that I wasn't interested and so on. And I was kind of, you know, kind of building up, and I said, okay, I thought of telling the shop steward, and I said, okay, well, for some reason, I thought I wouldn't have much longer there, and I would just kind of like get through it. I didn't anticipate it, so I was kind of going on and on. The shop steward normally just, it was in Queens, and it was like long blocks, and the shop steward normally dropped me off at the train station. Instead of me having to walk, and one day he, I think he was leaving early, so he wasn't going to be able to do it. So he didn't know what was going on, so he had told me, you know, I got so-and-so to drop you off, and that was kind of, you know. Yeah. So I got in, and I just said, okay, you know, I just let him drop me off. But just during that little time, I think he put his hand, like, on my leg or knee or something like that, and then I said, okay, well, earlier that day, I believe it was, either... I do have my extra log of it, but then I'm trying to remember if I'm just remembering now. Things were accumulating, and I realized, you know, okay, it looks like I'm going to have to tell someone. Like I said, within that particular day, I got in the car, and he had touched my leg, and I said, okay, he's just kind of like not getting it.
Yeah.
You know, he's just not getting it. And either just recently before that or just after, he had tried to kiss me. He tried to do something where he tried to put his arm around me. So, okay. Now, I said Monday. You know, the last thing was on a Friday, and I said, okay, Monday when the shop steward comes in, I'm going to have to let him know that certain things are happening. And it's, you know, and he's not backing off. So, actually, and I did tell the shop steward that Monday morning that I needed to speak to him later because it was, and he needed to kind of do some things, so I told him I needed to speak to him as soon as, you know, a little bit later. Before I got to speak to him, we were working... far from everyone else, and he pinned me down, put my arms down, and tried to put his mouth on me.
Right.
And being he's a man, I had to struggle to get away. I was turning my head back and forth so he wasn't, you know, like make contact and kiss me. And I had a broke away, and then I just went, you know, straight for the steward man, and I told him that this guy, you know, basically attacked me. And all along, I was telling him, no, I wasn't interested. And he would say something. He was from Portuguese. He had a bit of an accent or whatever. And he would say something like, you don't like a me, I like a you. And his wife is in Portuguese and this, that, and the other. And then, he would also say, you like women? Like, no. You know, I just said, I don't like you. You know, it's not that.
It is a job.
It's not that I like women, I just don't like you. So, he was just navigating it. So at that day when he, pinned me and tried to kiss me, that was the last straw. So I let the steward know. We called the local, the local 45 in Queens at the time, you know, the area that it happened in. And the guys from the local came down the next morning, I believe. I think they got there that day. But I had stopped work. I was quite upset. There was a diner or something about a block away, so I just went in and tried to get myself together. I'm just, I guess that nobody would like that, but I don't know, all through my life, I don't like people touching me when I say no.
Right.
You know, I wasn't one of those women who might, you know, kind of like laugh and think it was kind of cute or something, you know. I just never, because you didn't listen to me.
Right.
Yeah, you listened. So I was quite upset about it, and I filed a grievance. And I got some point in time, I guess it was over some months. The guys from the local, they did come down and spoke to the other guys, you know. And I guess they spoke to, they had laid the offender off. And I know they had spoke to the other guys. Actually, I heard, he left that job, but then I heard somebody tell me he was working another job with theirs. I'm not sure. But anyway, he left that site. They got him off that site. But the guys from the local, they interviewed the other workers. And some did say that they heard me telling him, like, to leave me alone or to stop or some other thing. They didn't witness that incident because we were far away from them. And we kind of ended up a little ditch also because we were erecting forms. But they heard various things that would have supported what what I was saying that was happening. And it's, you know, as far as reputation, I got a good one for my work and for, I guess, my character. Uh-huh. So that'll always lend you in good stead. And eventually there was an internal trial, mm-hmm. if you will.
With the union.
Right. Mm-hmm. And we went through that process. And I don't know, he didn't show up. I guess he felt that was his strategy not to show up. But he didn't show up. The head of the local showed up. And I had, you know, documentation from the interview that he mm-hmm. did with the other people. And basically he was thrown out of the local.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. He was not. He what do you call it?
He appealed.
It, you're right. He appealed yeah. it mm-hmm. some months later, but then that was turned down as well. So he was kicked out of the local. And you know, I heard like well, a friend of mine who's actually in that local, she was saying that you know, as happens mm-hmm. when word gets around, the story gets turned around. So yeah. I was the bad, you know, right, I was yeah. the bad guy. Yeah. But I did what I had to do, and he was a grown man. I think he was 43 or something like mm-hmm. that. So he, you know, mm-hmm. he should have known better. He had, you know, plenty of times to opportunities to stop, but he just mm-hmm. would never. So that I consider on him, you know, yeah. as a grown individual.
Well, it seems to me that's progress in the union.
Yeah, but exactly. So I was, because if they didn't do that, I just wouldn't be furious.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know what I would have done. Mm-hmm. I would have just been curious, you know, because,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
well, this is
yeah.
a good segue. You mentioned the Women's Committee,
mm-hmm.
and you're active with the Women's Committee?
Yeah.
And tell me about that. It has a long history.
Since there was a, I guess, kind of a grassroots one that I got involved in, I guess, probably within my second year as an apprentice,
mm-hmm.
With Barbara Trees and Grace Morgan and some other women. And we ran that for a number of years. More recently, and then it kind of petered. And then more recently, 2001? Yeah, I think it was 2001 where I guess the International decided to have what we call like a conference.
Right, I heard.
And so women just kind of went to that, and from that first conference, when basically when people got back, we started developing women's committees in the different, you know, states or locations.
Mm-hmm.
Or
and they were offering scholarships to women to go.
The first and second one they did it. The mm-hmm. first one, how did I go?
Well, that's all right.
Yeah, the first.
So you started putting it together, and how did didn't they do a survey at some point of the women carpenters?
Yeah, we did a survey because I had one that I was doing back from the I'll call it the more grassroots uh-huh. one back in like 90 or whenever, and I still had a hold of that, so I started to circulate that one, and then the other women said, well, let's you know, kind of like let's expand on mm-hmm. that. And so we did that. We revised some questions and mm-hmm. worked with Cornell
uh-huh.
In order to, you know, get that done. And and so it was, I guess, done more professionally, whatever. So Cornell helped us with that and getting it done. And I said, apparently there's, you know, people who do that kind of
yeah.
that kind
mm-hmm.
of thing. So
do you remember the name of the person from Cornell? Casey Wagner? Or?
Casey Wagner yeah. and Damone Richardson.
Oh, okay. I know Damone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then also once it was and we made a big effort to get it out because some women either didn't have time
mm-hmm.
or just didn't feel it would do any good or whatever.
Right.
So different, we encouraged like little meetings after like let's say union meetings mm-hmm. where we could go somewhere nearby and fill it out together and that mm-hmm. kind of thing. And then we'll kind of like check off who did theirs and not and then maybe give them a call mm-hmm. a little bit later after that.
Now, did so the union ever provide it. You with, I mean, did they provide you with the names and addresses so that you could
yeah.
get it to people?
Yeah.
Now, there is a big improvement,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, they absolutely did
uh-huh.
that.
Okay.
Else, you know, yeah, it would have been a lot harder to make sure that we tried to get all
yeah.
the members.
Who's the liaison from the union? Is that Ellie?
Yeah, Ellie Spicer, uh-huh. since she works in labor management, she would be, but as far as we, I said, organizing the Women's Committee, we have 11. You know, of course, different areas may have different.
Uh-huh.
We have 11 women. And
only 11 women who are members of it?
Right. or part of the steering committee.
Oh, steering committee.
Who kind of, you know, helped run it because certain things need to be done, you know, in order to put on
and
meeting.
And you're on
meeting
that.
After meeting, yeah. So I'm one of the 11 on the steering committee to, you know, whatever, get the work done, kind of. And I think we have a mailing list of roughly 250.
Wow.
You know, general, you know, women members. And there are different subcommittees, I guess you call. Oh, what I started to say, that we all, how you say, we don't have a title as far as president, vice president, I think we're all 11 equal.
Okay, that's nice.
But again, Ellie, since she works there, she has more contact and whatnot, so she's a liaison, but we all have the same title. And different women are involved in different aspects.
So what are some of the subcommittees, like organizing or program or what?
Right,
what
we have, we have the Habitat, which was what we, actually we kind of under, how you say, a little discussion about what do we call which committee now. Because like we had the political action, which Habitat came under that because that satisfies what we call our 21G obligation. Every member has to give 8 hours a year.
Okay.
Towards either picketing or, let's say if somebody's running for office and we're supporting them, they could work at you know, doing that. But they have to give a full day of service in one way or the other. So it's not necessarily picketing. It used to be called picketing duty, but it could be just the picketing. It could be the political thing, or it could be the Habitat.
Yeah.
We were able to get Habitat to make that requirement as well, you know.
Right.
So that way, you know.
So what are some of the other committees?
So there's the Habitat, there's the, what do we call it, like outreach. I'm having a problem with the title because we're starting to shuffle them. But which is, I'll say, the kind of like the career day kind of thing.
Okay.
Where, you know, we try to have one of the women speak. I've been doing that. The head of that committee, if you will, since its inception. For the last maybe 6 months, Tammy Rivera has joined me in doing that.
Now, where do you go to speak?
We get different ideas. Actually, the AFL-CIO have a number of schools that they do that with every year.
The Central Labor Council.
Right.
Yeah.
Peggy Ortega, she normally gives me her list every time, you know, she'll let me know what she has. But some women, They just give us things like, I got a call, they have to call me back with the specifics, but like, what do you call it, like a battered women's shelter that needed some work done.
Okay.
So I got a call about that, so I just told them, well, just let me, you'd ask me, was that possible? I said, yeah, you just
is
have to.
Is that the one that was on the punch list?
I'm not sure. I got this through one of the guys at the district council, because they asked, apparently, who do I contact, which woman do I contact to do that? So they gave him my number, and he asked me, and I said, yes, you know, possible. You just have to give me the date and, you know, kind of like tell me what they want done and the contact there and that kind of thing, and we can make it happen. That was maybe 2 weeks ago. He just had to call me back.
Oh, okay.
So I get stuff like that. Or
speaking at vocational schools?
Right. What was I going to say? Francois Jacobson.
Oh, yeah.
From, her daughter goes to Mott 2 school, I believe it is. So I did that, whatever, like a middle school, which I want to do also, but we do high schools.
I know they're trying to set up this high school, but trying to get women to go to high school for construction. I saw that she was encouraging people to speak there.
I think, I didn't do that one. I think either Tammy went down or Femi or, one of the other ladies, did that. But yeah, so we get information from different sources, and we're trying to get the word out there to think of, for women in particular, to think of non-traditional work as an option as well.
That's terrific. Yeah. Tell me, how many women would you say in the district council, I mean, you have this long mailing list, how many women do you think actually participating in the work of the committee?
Like I said, there's 11 core members, and two of them actually are trying to see in what way that we could get the other women involved in some way. It would help take off some of the load off of us, but also give them sort of ownership, because It requires time, and all of this is volunteer.
Right.
Actually, one of the women called me and was like, "Man, we were talking." She asked me, "Do we get paid for this?" And I'm like, "No,
no,
this is volunteer."
Yeah.
So it does.
And even like going
time.
To that dinner, the apprenticeship dinner.
Right.
I mean, you know, you had gone, but I mean, to have people do that kind of it's time consuming.
It is time consuming. Then. You still got your own life as well. And sometimes women have, they try to support themselves with side jobs or some other, if they're not working steady enough, try to get side jobs or some other kind of job to supplement with the income. So it is time consuming.
And do you ever have any regularly scheduled meetings for this?
Yes. We decided to have a quarterly because monthly is definitely too much.
Right.
2 months is still kind of soon. So we've been doing them quarterly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think our next is September 9th. But we've been doing them quarterly. And, that's fairly steady enough where it's not too overloaded for ourselves. And, that's what we decided is the best.
Good.
Friday.
Do you remember anything specifically about the survey, what women were interested in? Did you find that useful?
Actually, I think one thing that I was going to bring to the women at our next steering committee meeting, because, we could have a meeting, meeting. is that I think we need to go over that survey for the information some more. Because one question that came about was, there seem to be more apprentices coming than mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
And, there are several reasons for that, but, and then somebody was saying maybe we, of course need to try to find out why, but they suggested a survey, so I'm like, okay, we just had a survey. They said a survey for mechanics, so okay. We have to make sure we have all the information from the other survey that we can extract to try to get our answers first. But that's a question, and I know some of the reasons why the mechanics are not coming. But... the apprentices are a little, hungry.
They're looking for, support.
And they're looking for support and leadership and ways to keep, in the business.
Have you talked about doing this is an old idea in New York Tradeswoman stuff, but the whole idea of doing mentoring with the young women?
Yeah. I didn't know actually to complete the kind of But the mentoring, we started that about 6 months ago. And I think it's going okay. And also, I was reading some stuff over, trying to catch up on my email actually just yesterday. And I hear there was some talk about amongst like nationally about some other mentorship programs. And ladies mentioning that was kind of petering. And I don't know if I was necessarily petering already, but we thought that might be useful. But I don't know if it's as useful as we think somehow. They've been trying to combine, a place where the mechanic and the apprentice could learn, physically, do a job or project or whatever. And that's one sub workshop that we're working on too. Even if we're just helping with somebody else's house, it gives them an opportunity to work together and use the tools.
Yeah.
And we thought of maybe even going to the Home Depot classes together.
Oh, yeah.
Because they have classes and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And things like that. And also doing fun things together where you'll, develop a bond there.
Yeah.
And you usually support people when you know them.
Right.
Just overall, that's how life is. But if you disconnect yourself from, the issue is not your issue or whatever. So trying to do social things with them. The mentor and mentee, and opportunities for them to work together and use their skills. So I myself was not a part of that committee, but when the person reported on that, it was, the report was fair, but not necessarily as good as they thought it was going to be. Some people seem to think, apparently out of the, I think they had 16, if I remember, 16 matches.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was even. Turned out that it was even. Because, they put out a request who wanted to be a mentor, who wanted to be a mentee,
right.
And then I believe the number was 16 on each side. So they matched them. I guess it's a plus, but it just doesn't seem to be as big of a plus as is thought.
Mm-hmm.
Some reason.
Yeah.
not sure necessarily why mm-hmm. yet, but it's time commitment or what, I'm not sure. But I said maybe if we really get the opportunity for them to use their tools more and not mm-hmm. just talk about yeah. things, but use
their tools
more.
I'm not getting
more.
To use my tools.
Right. You know, because there's certain mentoring that's, that has to go on that has nothing to do with tools, just business and how to get through some certain issues at work. Just last week I ran into a woman, I think she's 30 now, and she was having issues on the job where her foreman was acting around in front of the guys and whatnot. And so she was having some issues, yeah. and so she needed some support. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I took her name and number, and I gave her mine. Mm-hmm. And best I could tell at the time, I said to myself, mentally, I should, you know, contact her in about a week or something just to mm-hmm. see how things are going. But I did tell her that you need to keep your notes.
Yeah.
I did tell her that.
Right.
And of course, she was, you know, she didn't want to cause trouble, and, sure. and she said she was kind of trying to blow it off, kind mm-hmm. of like laugh it off a little bit. But the things she said he was saying was, and then in front of the guys too, yeah. wasn't where he was trying to right. catch him alone. He was kind of yeah. being bold with that mm-hmm. something. So I said, it's not indicating that he's going to kind of back off. Mm-hmm. So I said, you may need to think about how you want to be at least more more direct in like, I told you, in your own words, think of how you want to say it, but try to think of, you know, ways you want to let them know that, you know, you'd rather just want to be treated professionally. Mm-hmm. And you know, that you didn't care for his comment,
right.
you know. So, but I did tell her that it's really necessary for you. Yes, I was just saying that, you know, there's mentoring mm-hmm. on just kind of like how to persevere in the business, mm-hmm. you know, emotionally and how to handle certain situations. So, there's always that, even if, kind of like your skills are okay. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes you just need somebody to talk to and ask, okay, when you had this situation, how did you handle it, mm-hmm. and that kind of thing. So as far as the substance is concerned, I think that at least the best info I can give her at this time is that it didn't seem that he was going to stop, mm-hmm. so you should start taking your notes, and if something happened, at least you would have your notes. You know, you'd be mm-hmm. kicking yourself if you didn't.
Right.
You know.
Tell me about, I'm interested in other things that you do around tradeswomen, and do you ever participate in the Tradeswomen Coffee House at New?
Yes, I haven't.
They have been doing it this summer, I think.
Right. Last I spoke to, who was it, Nicole? I can't think. But I spoke to someone last, because I was going to suggest a topic for one of the, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah.
For one of the dates. And because January, I guess we had people from, we had a workshop on occupational health and safety,
mm-hmm.
and I can't think of the hospital that came, representative from...
Maybe Mount Sinai.
Mount Sinai,
yeah.
Thank you. I contacted them, and they were able to come and give us a presentation.
Great, good
which
idea.
Which I know was helpful, mm-hmm. yeah. Because one of the things, that, you know, this is a tough business, and everything was made for a man's height and weight and build, mm-hmm. so yeah. everything is more strenuous for us.
Right.
You know, even carry the sheetrock, you know, everything.
Yeah.
So I thought that would help, and actually an offshoot from there is several things. Because the back injuries are prevalent in this business, mm-hmm. Just for the nature of the work. So... one of the ladies who was doing some health and fitness stuff, I put her in contact with Mount Sinai again, mm-hmm. because I don't necessarily have to be there. I just did the first thing.
Right.
But show exercises specifically on how you strengthen your back, mm-hmm. You know, to help avoid injuries. And also, there are certain ergonomics that, you know, we were trying to make benefit of. I was told there were certain gloves that could be of help, so I was put in contact with from my Mount Sinai, from the physical therapist.
Mm-hmm.
I still have yet to call them, but he gave me certain companies who were making certain gloves that might help us.
Uh-huh.
Certain gloves with gel
right.
in them,
mm-hmm.
and some other kinds of gloves. So I figured we'd have kind of like a little non-scientific study, if you will. I want to get some of the women together and use a power tool, maybe a shotgun, a screw gun, a drill or something, mm-hmm. and use the gloves and see if they seem like they benefited us or not. But I still have yet to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So
you're
going to
do that through the coffee house?
Actually, I was going to do that through, maybe we could invite them or something. I was going to do that for for one of our meetings or a sub-meeting or something. Uh-huh. We were starting having sub-meetings in addition mm-hmm. to quarterly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, but that made me think. That's why I had called New and asked them, because I thought it was beneficial to us. So yeah. if they wanted me to contact Mount Sinai mm-hmm. and, you know, and maybe we'll arrange the same kind of thing for New. And that's when I was told that they were going to do theirs. They weren't going to have the regular monthly meetings. They were going to have, you know, a limited times a year. Mm-hmm. I don't recall if she said quarterly. Mm-hmm. She probably said quarterly.
Yeah, so they're cutting months. Back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they're definitely not going to have the monthly, mm-hmm. she told me.
So now I'm very interested in Habitat for Humanity. Mm-hmm. How did you get involved with that?
And, Nefertari Barnes and I, mm-hmm. we do that together. We're both in that committee. Mm-hmm. We're the two members that run that.
And is that through the Carpenters?
Yeah, that's in conjunction with the Carpenters. Okay. And we normally, with the key people at Habitat, we normally, you know, sit down and arrange certain dates through the year. Mm-hmm. We usually have maybe about 4 dates a day. We'll arrange to work with them.
Mm-hmm. And this is Women Build?
Right.
Okay.
We call it a Women Build, where mm-hmm. they're all women there, whether they be skilled or not, because mm-hmm. they still have the regular volunteers.
Right.
Right. So sometimes we're working with the volunteers, mm-hmm. and then sometimes it's all skill,
yeah.
you know. So depends on what Habitat's want.
Right.
But again, we normally have several days during the year, mm-hmm. and they'll let me know how many people they want me to get, mm-hmm. me and Nefertari Barnes, excuse me. And we'll get, like, one day they wanted 10 women, and one day they wanted, like, 15 or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it just depends on how many they ask for. So as the days come, they'll let me know kind of like what they're up to, because when we're not there, there's still people working on the project, mm-hmm. you know, so it can be in various stages that'll let me know we need, let's say, 10 women, and we're going to be doing bathroom tiles or whatever. They'll let mm-hmm. me know what the scope of the work is going to be, and we'll just put it out there. You either make calls or put it on the internet that we need certain people for mm-hmm. certain dates, and normally, definitely not a Saturday. This last couple had been like on a Thursday, which was hard to get women, you know, and I wasn't working, and I was so scared that I was going to get a call from work, but I actually got a call from work that worked that day while I was at Habitat for Friday, uh-huh. but you know, it was so close, and so that's difficult, uh-huh. but, you know, we work with them and trying to get the, you know, to get the women there to, mm-hmm. To, you know, help complete their project, and also, it's a way to get back.
Right.
It's a way, and we're hardly on jobs together, so it's a way for us to work together as well.
Is it fun, or tell me about it?
Yeah,
I mean, is it rewarding?
It's a lot of fun. We're getting our work done, but we're having a lot of fun, because again, we don't get to see each other on the job site.
Yeah,
one of us
right.
here, one of us there, because there's not a whole lot of us in the first place.
Right.
So, it's fun, and we have you have your sense of accomplishment, and you have a sense that you're giving back to the community, because mm-hmm. there's always somebody less fortunate.
Oh,
right? So it's a good way to give back. And then on the days when there are non-skilled people there, it's a way for them to see that there are actually people doing this for a living,
right.
you know, professional people mm-hmm. who are doing it. And I've got I'm sure it's happened to some of the other women, but I've got a few women who have asked me, you know, about being a carpenter.
Uh-huh.
Wow. So I'll give them the info, you know, and contact information and so on. So it's just a way to also get out there that women do this,
that's
you
great.
Know, for a job.
Mm-hmm.
So it's rewarding all the way around.
That's great. Mm-hmm. I was thrilled to see you in the paper, in the New York Times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You've been done some work around union democracy issues,
mm-hmm.
I know. Have you been doing anything with that, or not so much? I don't know when you have time to do all
this stuff.
Well,
exactly, not so much. I've been trying to find a way to, kind of extract myself from so much obligations, because things take time, and you want to be, you know, well-rounded and not have to be somewhere all the time.
Right.
You know, have a meeting here or something to do there. So I've been, you know, trying to cut back some. I actually did run for a delegate a few years ago.
Mm-hmm. In your local?
Yes, in my local.
Uh-huh.
I lost by like 5 votes, which was, you know...
Now, this was a delegate for the district council.
Right.
Not for the convention, but for a district council.
Right,
okay.
Yeah,
so you lost by 5 votes? That's very good.
Yeah, so that was a good thing for the first time.
Uh-huh.
And the last time, it just that I had so much on my plate, you know, family-wise, mm-hmm. I would not have been able to devote the time as necessary because mm-hmm. I didn't want people saying that, okay, I'm delegated, I'm not
doing what
I'm supposed to do.
Yeah.
So I didn't want that. So maybe the next time I'll try. Because I really want to see, to be able to be in there to see how the wheels are turning, uh-huh. and for myself, try to make that change, of course. And I just figured I get to see, how you say, people for who they are.
Right. Now tell me, the guy who beat you by 5 votes, is he doing a good job?
Or? Actually, there was eight delegates, and actually, I think there were two guys who got the same okay. number, which wasn't, I was amazed that not that many people come out to vote, unfortunately, compared to how many members we have, yeah. very low turnout.
Do you have any idea of how many members are in your local?
I'm trying to think. I knew at one time, I got 25,000 in New York City. I think we retired and not. I think my local has 3,000. And I forgot the number that China, but it's like very low.
Yeah.
Which I hear.
It's pretty common.
Yeah. It's pretty common, unfortunately. Yeah.
Do you know if there's any other female delegates?
Now there is. Since I had ran, Ellie Spicer is a delegate. Oh.
From
6 months now? Roughly 6 months now.
Out of a local?
She's in 608.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Uh-huh.
That's pretty interesting.
Yeah. And she was the first one in, I think, 125 years or something.
Wow.
Like that. Yeah.
Okay. That's cool.
And I think she was a delegate to the convention as well.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, she, and so.
So that's actually a recent development.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, we all kind of, you know, support her and make call for her and whatnot. And I didn't, I think that would have made a difference had there been that much organization around mine. Not that it couldn't have happened, but I'm just saying, you know, we mm-hmm. did all that for her, I think, on 2 days. I'm specifically saying a lot of women did, you know, I think they did over 3 days in Pacific, mm-hmm. you know, the call. Mm-hmm. So that I'm sure that made a difference. And, you know, and you have a woman delegate now, which is mm-hmm. always the first step, you know. But like I said, so I will probably run it next time because well, for one reason, since if you don't know if it's public information on who voted mm-hmm. how, mm-hmm. you don't necessarily know who's doing the right thing or not.
Right.
You know, because they can say mm-hmm. one thing and you know, kind of like do another, basically.
Right.
You know,
such
talk
a club.
One way. Yeah. So that, like I said, I'm interested in finding out.
Tell me about, now, corruption has been a big subject in the Carpenters.
Mm-hmm.
And how's that affected you? I mean, we talked a bit about that in terms of the cronyism and the mm-hmm. closeness to the mm-hmm. bosses, but any other things you care to say about that subject?
Well, I think I shouldn't say that because maybe I don't hear about it so much. I want to say I think maybe the corruption as far as like mob-related may be lessened, but that's mm-hmm. probably still there too. But I mm-hmm. think the worst thing is the contractors or foremen, you know, just having too much power and just kind mm-hmm. of doing what they want rather than doing what the contracts said. But like I said, the contractual language is not in their favor because if you used to read our contract, it was great.
Yeah.
You know, there are things that they can't do, but mm-hmm. again, if it's not
enforced,
it doesn't mean anything.
Right.
And what I'm really concerned about now is that the actual, you know, they're giving them some actual rights that it's going to be hard to get back.
Mm-hmm.
Just like I recently heard, I don't know if it's true because I don't have a copy of the contract like that. Let's say lunch. Lunch used to be 10 minutes to 12 to 12:30 because we got 10 minutes cleanup time. So now, and then at the end of the day, you wrap up. If you get up 2:30, you wrap up 20 after. If you like, obviously, you need to wrap mm-hmm. up your tools, yeah. your leads, your whatever, different things you might have out. So now I hear in the contract, mm-hmm. I hear that, let's say, lunch is 5 minutes to 12,
mm-hmm.
and you wrap up 25 after.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, they got 10 minutes.
Whittling away.
Yeah, exactly. It's whittling away.
Yeah.
And when the thing is, at the end of the day, and there's not a game box on any floor, there's not a, every floor, there's not a game box like within, so you, how do you wrap up at 25 after and then be done with your day at 30?
Yeah,
right. You know.
Yeah, so it's your time.
Right.
That you're contributing.
So, right. Exactly. So things like that, it's like, again, I'm like, how could one have voted for that to be okay?
Yeah. Somebody who hasn't been on the job for quite a while, probably.
Yeah. No way. And then, so I have to try to get that factual information. Yeah. And actually, I was supposed to, because they have we have an anti-corruption line, and some people where you can call it anonymously, and some people do, and I've called it both anonymously, and sometimes use my name. Sometimes when I call the local, not necessarily mine, and I'm going to check with mine, but like I work. As in the territory of the phone, and you just kind of get blown off, but there's information you need to know as a worker, but especially as a steward, you know.
Yeah.
So what I was thinking of was calling that hotline and asking them, I need factual information that I'm not able to get, and I need to know that as a shop steward to be, you know, to basically be effective. But that's one thing that I heard is now actually in contractual language that, you know, lunch is your lunch is this. But as I understood, you know, we're supposed to get 10 minutes cleanup time because we're, you know, dirty, our hands dirty and whatnot, and so how could we eat? So I need to get some factual, you know, legal information.
It'd be interesting to see if you get anything out of them.
Yeah. So, again, that's what I intended to do today because I just didn't trust getting it from the local, actually.
Yeah.
Actually, I got kind of blown off, you know, when I asked about some things as far as the new contract. I had the information.
Do they have... like rebriefing stewards courses, you know?
Only in the sense that certain licenses expire. Oh. Like you have to have a license from the fire department to be a steward, and that expires every 2 years, and certain things expire at different times. So you have to get those recertified, but no, which I think there should be ongoing. Actually, I think, and I was hoping that since we were overseen by the government, that these people from the corruption hotline to just have like maybe at least quarterly meetings with stewards to see what's happening.
Yeah,
you know, because there are certain contractors who are known to be bad, who are just known to be real bad, just almost like slave work.
Yeah.
You know, and then there's just certain instances. You know, they'll get away with what they can get away with.
Right.
You know, and even the good ones, they'll just try to push it some more because get a little bit more, get a little bit more. But that's what was in my mind is how I can make that happen. But that there'd be some at least quarterly, because monthly may be too much. At least quarterly, you know, you'll see what the stewards say is happening, and then from that you should try to tackle a situation.
Yeah.
You know, you're just gonna tackle the contractors or you know, but you see what's going on so you could. Rectify it, and the best way to get that is from the stewards, because since I've been a steward, I notice how, because like as a regular worker, let's say I don't notice as much. I'm doing my job, you know.
Yeah, because part of your job as a steward is to be vigilant,
right?
To be paying attention,
exactly. To be paying attention to safety, to be paying attention to different things. So that's when I noticed. And then over the years, how mythic or bad, or you know, things have changed.
Yeah.
You know, and I worked for a company for a couple of years. So again, in those instances, you know, and they weren't asking me to do anything wrong. You know, working my day. Actually, I wasn't. You know, they didn't want me to work for any less. They didn't want me to stay for overtime and like pay me regular time or anything like that. But so I was a company named Card for a while. But even when I wasn't, when I was just a regular worker. You just don't notice things. Mm-hmm. But when you're a shop steward, you'll just see all the things that are going wrong. You'll see how you're not being supported by the local, you know, basically if you have some issues. But what I think one thing would be a great thing is like there could be quarterly meetings and then you act on the things that you're told, that you're finding out.
Yeah.
You know, how that's going to happen, I don't know.
You might have to make it happen.
Yeah.
So tell me your plans for, you know, your goals, your dreams. Are you planning to continue working as a carpenter, or you have something else in mind? Or
I just love the work so mm-hmm. much, and it's hard for me. Don't think about, you know, if I want to, I don't know, be a teacher, be an organizer, or do something else.
Mm-hmm.
One thing, you have to consider age.
Yeah.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
And there are certain aspects of the building, you know, of being a carpenter that are less taxing than, you know, some others, like, mm-hmm. of course, foundation or framing. I mean, not framing so much, but she rocking is hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if you're doing hardware, like the acoustical ceilings, if you could do that,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's the lighter end of the work. Because I just truly like to work, and I don't want to, you know, leave it. But I can't necessarily produce as much,
right?
You know, and
you think you might like to teach carpentry?
I was definitely thinking of that as an alternative.
So,
actually, you're teaching it as an alternative. Actually, I teach at CWE sometimes.
Oh, okay.
What is it? Consortium
for Work?
Yeah. If I'm not working, it depends, you know.
Uh-huh. And those are the classes for kids, right?
Right.
In the high school.
Right. They usually go through a certain, in the last year or so, mm-hmm. they kind of get segued into, you know, the program.
But and yeah, do you ever kids. Get any girls in there sometimes?
A few. Mm-hmm. There have been a few. I know one has become a carpenter sometimes. A lot of times they want to become an electrician.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we call one and one to be a plumber. But there may be one or two
mm-hmm.
out of each class, yeah. but yeah, not yeah. that many. So that's one reason why we try to, you know, do the career day things,
yeah.
to try to get more women to, you know, mm-hmm. to think. Because I don't recall having anybody come to my, well, maybe it was the nature of my school, Brooklyn yeah. Tech, I don't know. But, you know, I don't recall it being an option
yeah,
for me.
Right.
You know.
Definitely wasn't for me.
Right. You know.
Tell me your thoughts about women in the trades. Like, do women belong in this business?
Oh,
what's
yeah.
the forecast? What do you say?
They absolutely do belong, but they have to get the message that it's an alternative and that they're capable.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not for everybody, because a certain amount of it, no matter which field is physical,
mm-hmm.
no matter what trade. But they have to realize that there are more options otherwise than being a secretary, a nurse, mm-hmm. or you know, which are wonderful careers, but it may not have satisfied them as much as this was, if mm-hmm. it was an option. If they, mm-hmm. because I'm very satisfied with the work, because I really would not want to leave it. And I haven't looked back once I had left my other job. Mm-hmm. There was I didn't look back once.
Yeah, have you seen the new ad that New is doing on
the one
with
where,
the yeah uh-huh. woman working, and it says the average wage and 52. Yeah.
No, I'm visualizing the picture.
Yeah,
sure
she's working.
Doing.
I think they're trying to make it look generic, uh-huh, you know. And it says carpenter, electrician, plumber,
right,
or whatever.
Right, right.
And it
right.
says the average wage in the building trades is 53 something. Need
yeah.
to say more.
Uh-huh.
That's what
uh-huh.
you know. And it's been very effective. Apparently,
yeah,
they've gotten
that
a lot of calls.
And
they're doing a whole new bunch now. They're going to put it on buses and trains and yeah.
I
saw it on.
You stand for the bus in different places, which is very powerful.
So that's
very
exciting. That's very good.
And because I don't think they know
mm-hmm.
women that you know, you can make a good living if you could, you know, it's kind of, you know, taxing another way, but, you know,
yeah.
I mean, but it's a good way to make a living and to have, like, you know, hopefully one job rather than two or three, you know, paying,
right.
you know, minimum
McDonald's.
Wage or, yeah, you know, so...
Now, tell me about the question of race and gender. Which has been the biggest factor in your career? Or one of the women said, depends on what day.
Mm-hmm.
Joy Beer said that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think it's probably gender.
Mm-hmm.
I think just overall, they just don't view women as equals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not necessarily equal in physical, because there's a difference in us physically.
Yeah, sure.
And that's just, but you need to be treated equal,
mm-hmm.
you know. Like I said, at the beginning of construction or whatever, everything was based on a man,
mm-hmm.
and it should have been based on both,
yeah.
you know, but it wasn't. You know, so everything is more taxing for us, but that doesn't mean that, you know, physically, that we shouldn't be there.
Mm-hmm.
We should be treated as equal people. And equally intelligent, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And it just that over history and time, women haven't been taught to do this work. So, mm-hmm. I mean, not necessarily come naturally as a boy who might have had shop classes mm-hmm. or father took them around wherever. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, it's a different situation for women in that respect. But they absolutely belong there. And as I tell some women, you go on the job like you own it. Okay. You know, you don't be meek about it. Mm-hmm. You just go there and like you're supposed to be here and hold your head up high. And some women, I can see that they're just kind of timid and tentative about it, and I think that, you know, works against you. Just on the job where I am, a guy, I forgot what we were talking about, but then he said something like, he said, "You're good." And then he said, no, actually he didn't say that, but they think that a lot. But then he said, and the problem is, and you know it. And I just kind of laugh, but that's mm-hmm. not true. But I know I'm a capable person, and I just go about, you know, doing my thing. Mm-hmm. And I just remember the comment. Yeah. But a lot of times they think you're supposed to, they kind of walk 2 steps behind and look to them for mm-hmm. all this guidance. And as their apprentice, of course, you're looking for some guidance. But they just generally think, because I think life and society
everything.
Teaches them, yeah, exactly, everything teaches them that they are basically better.
They're the man.
They are the man, and that's the better thing to be. And so it's hard to get respect. So actually, I was a little bit frustrated over, everything that has to go in the book. So I'll just say to you,
okay,
that there was an electrician who. Okay. I think it's the 64. Men think about six times, 30 seconds, a lot. I forgot I do it one time.
Right, yeah.
So how you dress on the job in that environment with all these men, it does mm-hmm. make a difference.
It does.
It just does. It's just a fact of life. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't want to dress sloppy, but you want to dress appropriate
right.
and not...
Be giving signals.
So that I really thought was, you know, over the yeah. line the wrong way. And actually I told her, I said, well, you know, I forgot how I said it to her, but I said something like, you know, your top is up and you need to try to pull this down or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And so she did it that day, and then it seemed like she was, you know, kind of like getting the picture. But then another day I see her have on something tight and short. And then I noticed in the mornings, like I think I noticed today when she came into work, mm-hmm. she had on this tiny tank. And so even though she changed
uh-huh.
that point,
yeah.
but the thing is, you're giving the guy a visual,
really,
and,
yeah.
and you should always keep it professional.
Right, yeah.
So it's be good. You can think about sex all the time, so you know, they don't need anything.
They don't
extra.
Need any help.
And then that could spur a comment, and then...
Uh-huh. Like, one thing leads to another.
Exactly.
Like that you're putting out the signal.
Yeah, yeah.
That was a scene in... Well, I won't go into it now.
Mm-hmm.
Any advice you want to offer to young women, or sum up about your own career satisfactions?
Well, I'll say maybe my own career. Like I said, I haven't looked back, and I just really enjoy the work itself. I love using my hands, and mm-hmm. I just love, you know, seeing what I've done at the end of the day. And knowing that I guess I've succeeded in 17 years in being here. Because I think a lot of women, they'll start, you know, mm-hmm. for various reasons, they'll just decide to leave. Because mm-hmm. it is a lot to deal with, and maybe it's too physical for them, and maybe the environment is, you know, mm-hmm. Not acceptable enough for them, and then they just decide to leave. But I've hung in there for the 17 years, going on 18, and I'm proud of myself for that. And I think one person, because... Somebody, I don't know who the first woman carpenter is, but somebody decided to do this, and you always make it better for the next one if mm-hmm. you do the right thing and if you're professional.
Well, we have, in this book, we have the first woman carpenter in New York City.
Okay,
and
I was wondering.
She's fabulous. You would love each other. I mean, she's so great. She's like you. She's an organizer.
Oh, good, because I was wondering. Actually, I was saying several months ago, I said we should find out who the first woman carpenter is in New York, you know,
yeah.
of course.
Well, I mean, she was
her.
In the union.
Uh-huh.
You know, there probably were women carpenters who were doing carpentry work, but
uh-huh.
for your union.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Consuelo Reyes Terrell
uh-huh.
is her name.
I have
yeah.
to write it down, because I said
she was a real
so,
activist.
And we should, you know, I think it was maybe Mother's Day or something, and uh-huh. that month we were having, I mean, Mother's Day month, and I just thought, you know, we
yeah.
should celebrate.
We should know our history.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Somebody started the
yeah.
ball.
Well, and Ellie Spicer has a very interesting history. You know, she
mm-hmm.
used to work for New.
Right.
And she, you know, she's just a tremendous person. Uh-huh. So,
yeah, she yeah. came, she decided, you know, to start a high state, funneling all these other women into this high-paying right. career.
Go
and
into.
Get it for myself.
And that happens.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, yeah. Connie was helping minority men get in when she decided, mm-hmm. hey, wait a minute, yeah. I'm going to do it too.
Uh-huh. Exactly. You see, but had it not been kind of like put in front of her, kind of,
uh-huh. that's right.
you know, it wouldn't have been a thought. Yeah. So, again, that's the impetus for me doing mm-hmm. the career, that kind of thing. You kind of, you got to get it out there. You got to get it out
that's
there.
That's right. We have to get it out there more. Now, tell me, yeah. Where did you get your ethic to be always organizing, to be doing all these things you're doing? Where does that come from?
No, but I guess ever since I was young, I had a sense that whatever situation was, the bad thing that were going on was that individual people decided that they were going to do the wrong thing, mm-hmm. or they weren't going to do the right thing, mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. they were going to turn their head. But it was the individual people that, you know, because it's not one person who's like, got everybody, how you say, like brainwashed yeah. or like something where, oh, okay, we got to do this, you know, like drones or something. But it's all these individual people who had a decision to make, mm-hmm. you know, and basically made the wrong one.
Yeah.
You know, so I always said, at least in my life, I would mm-hmm. make the right one.
Yeah.
And would try to influence people, you know, in a positive way. But I knew one person I had control over was me, and it's mm-hmm. a decision that I made. And they would have an impact, good, bad. But nothing, I don't believe anything is indifferent.
Mm-hmm.
Basically,
yeah.
you know, there's not much indifferent in the world. You know, it's either kind of like good or bad, positive mm-hmm. or negative.
Yeah.
You know, and you always have to try to make the right decision. So that, I don't know. I just had a sense of that when I was very young, you know, that all my decisions, for one, that they would lead me in a certain direction.
Mm-hmm.
Like I kept making bad ones if I decided to take drugs or if I decided to rob somebody or do anything, that would mm-hmm. lead me on a path. And definitely, and even if I don't know, to stay relationship-wise, I didn't want to like use people or anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just always wanted to be proud of myself. To mm-hmm. and again, if I was to use people, that would be bad energy out there, if you will.
Uh-huh.
That would if it wouldn't necessarily get back to me, it would make men think the worst of women.
Mm-hmm.
So everything has a consequence to me.
Yeah.
It just always did. So I knew one person I had control over was me.
Mm-hmm.
And in my life, but I always knew my life could have been. I think the first was 2003 or two.
Mm-hmm.
I forget. But somehow the ball got rolling, and I assumed the international and put out, I guess, a word. And then the different locals throughout the United States. And then actually Canada came as well.
Wow.
And so that first one, it was just wonderful because you got to meet all these women carpenters from all over, you know.
And about how many were there, would you say?
The first time, I think the number 250 was in my head.
Okay.
The last time, it was a lot more.
Wow.
Because I think the first time there were like, if I could recall, all I know is that like we had at least double the number that went from New York
uh-huh.
this time than before.
Good, yeah.
And it was a lot larger, a lot more people came. So it's, you know.
So what kind of program did they have? Was it political in the sense of actually talking about tradeswomen issues and things like that? Or
there were, unfortunately, I can't even know the workshop. There were workshops. I just recall one on having to do with, like, lack of a better word, kind of like how do you handle different situations that happen mm-hmm. in the business or on the job site. I guess some of them handle with humor and some of them handle in different ways, but just how, you know, mm-hmm. we kind of yeah. get through it. And for some reason, that's the only one that I can remember. Uh-huh.
Did you feel it was worthwhile?
I think it was worthwhile, but I don't think it was concrete enough in that, okay, once we have these workshops, what are you going to do?
Mm-hmm.
From
go forth and have some plan.
Yeah. You know, and I recall in one of the workshops, I wish I could remember what it was mm-hmm. titled, and there was, I think there was one or two men in the room,
mm-hmm.
and we were talking, I think talking about the lack of bathrooms or something, mm-hmm. you know. you know, as when you get together and you talk about different things, of course, mm-hmm. people have a common instances all over. Right, so we were just talking about something, and then I remember somebody said, like, I don't know how they said it, but kind of like, be mindful that we have a man in the room. And so I said, well, this is a women's conference. This is an opportunity for us to, you know, speak our truth.
Yeah.
And we weren't saying anything bad about him. We were just talking and speaking our truth. And I felt I was just kind of annoyed that we have, I don't know, what, 30 women in the room or whatever, and this is the women's conference. Yeah. Yeah, this is one man here. And I'm not quite sure why he was there. Anyhow, but that we would kind of temper ourselves, because we weren't being rude and nasty. We weren't like being man haters or anything that. We were just talking. And this person would want us to like to temper ourselves, change ourselves, because there was this man in the room. And so I just kind of said what I said, that, you know, we're just speaking the truth, right, and not being disrespectful. So I don't think, I didn't think that was a fair comment to even make. But I think a lot of the women, if not anything else, they just enjoyed being together, and you get more momentum, and you just get, like, when you were thinking, like, power. I think one lady did say she was having a, and I guess there were a number of them there that were having a lot of bad, you know, situations, uh-huh. especially a lot of times if you try to speak out, you know, they can make it real hard for you. You don't work a lot, or different things happen. And one young lady, she was really having a hard time, and she just said that she was glad that she came, so she got another, she got kind of like shored up so she could try to go on some more, you know, rather than leaving. So at least that, and I'm sure if it happened for her, it happened for, you know, some other women there as well. Yeah. But I would like for the conferences to, like, seem like if you want to have this and you want to get the information from whatever workshop it is, mm-hmm. then you should be doing something with that.
Yeah.
And I don't see that.
Yeah.
It's a way to get together and support each other and that kind of thing, but I don't see as much concrete change
what's the
happening.
Plan? That's
but,
right.
You know,
God knows there's a lot that needs to be done.
Right, because we shouldn't be able to. I mean, we shouldn't be left to do it ourselves.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You should be okay. If we're not in full contact of what's going on out there, these women are telling us this. Mm-hmm. So then you have to act on it. It's not for us to hash out our problems and work them out ourselves, you know, and solve
right.
them.
Yeah.
We have a district council for that. We have an international for
right.
that. So to me,
it's interesting to see what they are doing.
Right.
You know.
Like I said, it's wonderful, but if it changes nothing, then it's not as, definitely not as meaningful as it could be, and then it's only for, you know, kind of like to keep some women kind of like going, you know, like the one that's there. But something needs to be Doug McCarron or a committee or something should be
to put women on the radar.
Right.
More.
Exactly.
Did you meet a woman named Elizabeth Blackwell from Boston? I met her when I went up there for some for our AD conference.
Uh-huh.
And then she was talking about this conference was going to be coming up in the future for
mm-hmm.
women, and then actually I was really surprised
mm-hmm.
that it did.
Yeah, I don't recall if I met her or not.
Yeah. I saw she was elected to office up in Boston. Maybe
mm-hmm.
I'll try to...
Well, okay, since you mentioned that, what we did find out, because on one of those, I don't know, if either one of those classes or workshops...
She might have been appointed, too.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember.
Mm-hmm.
I read
it. We found out that in other places, I can't recall states, but we found that in various states that there are women in a lot more leadership positions
mm-hmm.
than right here in New York.
Yeah.
That was definitely bold and blatant and whatnot,
mm-hmm.
which was a little stunning considering where New York was much more progressive and all
yeah,
of that.
Right.
But there were a lot more women
mm-hmm.
in different title positions,
mm-hmm.
Whether it be organizer, I think one woman was the VA, and I don't recall where, Joanne something, I think. I believe the black woman
mm-hmm.
named Joanne something. I believe she was a VA somewhere. There were women who were organizers.
Mm-hmm.
And in different things,
mm-hmm.
you know,
a
lot more than New York. You know, they have women in different, you know, after even teaching. And, well, we don't have any teachers now. Ellie taught
wow.
for a period of time, I think. I'm not sure if Rebecca did. Yep. I think the only teacher might have, been Ellie. I know Star was there.
Is Lisa Narducci still around?
Yes, she is. She hasn't been certainly involved in the Women's Committee, the new one. Mm-hmm. She was heavily involved in the one that you, that myself, Barbara Tree, Grace Morgan, and some other women involved in. And doing that, you know, for years and years. Mm-hmm. And I guess more or less it's decided to do. You know, you get kind of worn out.
And decide to
mm-hmm. devote your time to either work and family or whatever.
Right.
But other aspects. Mm-hmm. But she's, of course, she's still a carpenter, and mm-hmm. I worked on her with her on the job, I think, for the, probably the first time, maybe 9 months ago, which was interesting. And then mm-hmm. another one carpenter out of my local. And I'm very rarely on the job in the same crew with women. Sometimes mm-hmm. there may be, you know, like two or three different carpentry mm-hmm. outfits. On the same job, like uh-huh. maybe the framing, like now, we're framing and rocking. I'm on that crew, and then we had a furniture crew come in. Actually, there's no woman on that, but on the woodworking crew, another mm-hmm. carpentry outfit, there's a woman there named Marsha Dawson, she's a carpenter. So sometimes there can be more than one carpentry outfit there, and mm-hmm. maybe there may be a woman on another one, but usually very rarely, like same three carpenter women mm-hmm. on the same, with the same company or the same crew. Actually, one guy kidded us about that.
Oh, well, they're taking over. I wanted to ask you, are you active with TNT? Are you a member?
I'm trying to remember now, because I believe I did become a member, but then just my time is just devoted to trying to effect change. Well, concretely,
locally. I was always a member. I was a founding member with mm-hmm. AUD and, mm-hmm. you know, the Women's Project. But mm-hmm. this year I let my membership lapse because I put so much money in the book and I took this leave. And mm-hmm. But I have the paper for when I go back. Mm-hmm. I think we should support it because I think they're really trying to, you know, just even through membership. It's no time, mm-hmm. but I think they're actually... You know, I think they're actually making some headway. Mm-hmm. They have some smart women involved.
She was on the board.
Lauren Sugarman. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Right.
So we should do that. Mm-hmm. We should support
it. Yeah, I think they're definitely worth support.
Yeah. Okay. And, 3 hours in a day. I know. Yeah. So thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Anything else you want to say?
I can't think. I think you had asked me anything I wanted to say to other women. That I just want to say, I don't know, just think out the box, you know, more, whether it be construction, but at least non-traditional, because generally they pay more, whether it be Con Ed or, I don't know, something like that, mm-hmm. they generally pay more. And you want one job that can support yourself and your family rather than a few, but you need to, you know, you need to have work for family also, or at least a life otherwise.
Right.
And if you can get one job, then therefore you don't have to work others, and you could, you know, enjoy life, but life is not just work. Mm-hmm. You know, but think out of the box and to know your value, because mm-hmm. when you feel value, even though some things may not necessarily come to you, easily, but you'll know that if given the opportunity, you can learn it. You can go somewhere to learn it, or you can build on what you have. Mm-hmm. But you could always do more than what mm-hmm. you think you could do, you know, once you put your mind to it. And that box, if you think out the box, you could realize that you could actually build the box itself. You know, if you're confident, you get to build that box too. So you can expand your box. But, you know, think out of the norm, and your life opportunities will expand for you as well.
Good.
So.
Excellent.
That's my advice to you.
Thank you, Veronica.
You're welcome.